The idea as to who is Jesus, what is he, what does he stand for, was he really, was he ever, was he a human being? If so, was he human and or divine, has baffled people. And it's caused religious wars and anxieties and infighting and politics and all sorts of attacks and schisms and splits and divisions for centuries. And you know, some of the most entertaining ideas, some of the cleverest of all, come from professional theologians. And many of them are still, apparently, quite baffled by the real Jesus. Depending upon who you're reading and who you're talking to, he was called the Son of Man, the Son of God, the Christ or the Anointed One, Emmanuel, or God living with us. His enemies called him everything you can imagine, some of which is a great deal embarrassing and would not bear repetition on television. A lawbreaker, an insurrectionist, a charlatan, a magician, a tool of the devil. But who was this man known as Jesus of Nazareth, the carpenter, who became one of the most influential names in all of history? The Gospel account of Matthew records an incident where Jesus asked his disciples what his press said. Who did people say that he was? Some of the ideas were equally as weird as they are today. His disciples said, well, some claim you're not you, you are John the Baptist. Some said you are Elijah. Some said you are Jeremiah or one of the prophets. Now, Jesus probably got a little bit of a chuckle out of that. His press was just about as bad then as it is today. You have to excuse some of those ancient scribes and residents of Palestine. Life was a lot harder then than it is now, apparently. They didn't have anywhere near the leisure to be imaginative and creative as we are today. Today, no one would say Jesus is not Jesus, but is Elijah. They wouldn't say that he's John the Baptist because they've got a John the Baptist. So today, they call Jesus a hippie. He came head-to-head with the establishment. He's a revolutionary, they say. He's a homosexual, they say. Some say he's a radical feminist. Some say he's a magician. He's been, believe it or not, even called him a hallucinogenic mushroom. Jesus was supposedly a code name for the mind-bending fungus. Now, that's a weird idea. You may have noticed a few things sell better, but very few, than Jesus. Nowadays, writers and movie producers have come up with just about the perfect product. Anyway, in some of these roles, in the motion pictures that I see, he plays the part of a bungler who never quite gets the gist of what's going on around him and is certainly too spaced out and transcendental to realize that his cult threatens to bring down the wrath of the Romans. Now, to show his versatility, that is, this modern Jesus made in the image of people, there's the movie called The Passover Plot, based on the best-selling book by the same name. And here, instead of a bungling mystic or some sort of a person, Jesus plays the cunning Jewish nationalist, a patriot driven by an obsession to expel the Romans from Palestine. He carefully plans his own execution, in which he's drugged and later removed from the cross as if he is dead. And in this, the story goes, in order to set himself up as a martyr around whose death the Jews could rally against the Roman occupiers. Now, if neither of these messiahs are bizarre enough for you, you might be interested in a book written several years ago purporting that Jesus was the leader of a cult devoted to magic, self-hypnotism, and hallucinatory and occult experiences. The author happens to be a professor of ancient history from Columbia University, and also, incidentally, is an Episcopal priest. Now, this cult supposedly conducted secret initiation rites which included magical incantations and possibly was spiced with rather unorthodox sexual goings-on as well. And along these lines, not many months ago, amid a lot of heated controversy, a Scandinavian producer shot a film in which this Jesus, in his thinking, was portrayed in illicit and explicit sex scenes, both heterosexual and homosexual, concepts which sometimes apparently some people feel they can validly infer from the gospel accounts, though where they find it, I haven't the faintest idea, and I've read them dozens of times. But you know, despite all the grotesque and the unbelievable depictions of Jesus by cynics and skeptics, by believers and well-wishers and charismatic preachers alike, the most significant and deceptive Jesus caricatures are created by faithful, hymn-carrying, psalm-singing Christians themselves. They tend to want to fabricate a Jesus to suit their own tastes, at least to create a happy, largely harmless Jesus harmless because they portray him as nothing more than a man. But with believers who really think about life after death, about the second coming of Christ, about the Lord that is up there in heaven that does things for them right now today, then it's more like a Jesus who does the things they want him to and who says the things they want him to, who doesn't really step on their toes by giving them very unpalatable messages or orders and ordering them to do something they don't want to do. He doesn't tell them to change their job, change where they live, change their habits, change their way of thinking, their perceptions, alter their point of view, alter their appearance, wear different clothing or anything. He just loves them and they love him, and that's why they're so happy all the time. Now, all of these Jesuses that I'm talking about so far are pure applesauce, total fake. Absolutely non-existent. We've had the Christ who justified the Crusades, the Jesus of the Jewish persecutions and the Inquisition, and the name who has been bandied about to justify more wars, more suffering, more torture of human beings than you would ever care to elaborate. In fact, a few years ago, one prominent African religious figure claimed that racial violence was justified because, to quote him, "In accepting the violence of the cross, God in Jesus Christ sanctified violence into a redemptive instrument for bringing into being a fuller human life," end of quote, if you can believe that. So the most widespread false Christs are not Superstar or the Passover plotter or some species of Middle Eastern mushroom. The most deceptive false Christs today are those that live in the imagination of millions of sincere folk who have created a Jesus who came to cast aspersions on the Old Testament, do away with the law, despite the fact that the real Jesus said he came to fulfill and to really magnify, to illustrate, and to live in his own life the perfect fulfillment of that law. People have constructed a Jesus who was meek and mild, would never step on an ant, and would never utter a harsh word to anybody, even though the real Jesus was at times blunt, caustic, sarcastic, refused to help people, and even at times got rather angry with people. He even healed in anger on one occasion. Now, people could not abide that. In the book, The Real Jesus, that I'll talk about a little bit later, all of that is revealed, exactly the kind of a Jesus Christ that the people who lived, ate, worked, talked, slept, walked, suffered, endured with, knew him to be. It's about time people began to blow the dust off their Bibles and look at the real Jesus as Matthew knew him, as Mark knew him, and Luke knew him, and John knew him. And even the Apostle Paul, who said, "I have seen Jesus Christ." They don't want the Jesus Christ of the Bible, because the Jesus Christ of the Bible is going to tell them what to do, how to live. He's going to give them orders. He's going to tell them about a resurrection from the dead, not an immortal soul. The real Jesus is not some versatile mental companion like a household god that you tuck away in your pocket who's always there to help you in your mystic moods or helps you appreciate a lily or pity the poor. No, he is a Jesus who will remake your very life. He will rebuke you. He will alter your own way of thinking, your way of saying and doing. He will totally change your very personality. Little by little, perhaps, as people would read in the very eyewitness accounts, they would begin to realize they have never yet even been introduced to the real Jesus. Rather, they have seen a fake, a charlatan, a false Christ made in the image of people by the millions.
Pioneer 10 races out of our solar system while religious war rages in Northern Ireland. Politicians search for peace while pollution engulfs our planet. The gross national product of the United States exceeds $1 trillion while over 15,000 people starve to death worldwide each day. In this age of paradox unparalleled, where can you turn for understanding? There is a source that answers the frightening questions of the 20th century. It's called The Plain Truth. This magazine of understanding reveals the meaning behind today's world news and shows you the good news beyond. Today, more than ever before, you need the plain truth. For your free sample copy of the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Let me send you your free copy of the Plain Truth magazine. It's absolutely free if you'll pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225. You know, we might shake our head in disbelief at the weird, offbeat, irreligious depictions of Jesus splashed across the silver screen, but you can really hardly fault the movie producers, because Christian theology is in such a state of chaotic disarray that if the producers were actually to go to leading theologians and try to find out from a collection of the leading theologians or the scholars of, say, 140 different brands of religion, they'd come away shaking their own heads in disbelief. How could they ever put together a crazy patchwork, crazy quilt personality that would emerge from a discussion with about 140 different theologians of 140 different cults, sects, and churches? Recently, in fact, a very prominent German publisher accused theologians of what amounts to a scandalous cover-up. He said in a controversial book called Jesus, Son of Man, his name is Rudolf Augstein, who founded the influential Der Spiegel magazine, and he accused theologians of keeping, and I quote, their gods in a storehouse instead of distributing them among the people, end of quote. By that he means that theologians do not tell lay people some rather disturbing things that they themselves really believe about Jesus and about the Bible. You might be interested, I don't know what church, if any, you belong to, but you might be very shocked to discover what some of the leading religious thinkers really think about Jesus, perhaps members of your own church, and what they do not believe. Recently here in Southern California, a leading newspaper ran a fascinating article a few weeks ago in which they contacted a number of prominent theologians to see if charges like those of Rudolf Augstein's were correct. Among others, they contacted the Catholic and Protestant Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California, which is an interdenominational complex of theology schools having the largest theological faculty in the world. And a spokesman said he did not know of any of the schools there in Berkeley in which a significant part of the faculty would accept statements that Jesus rose physically from the dead or that Jesus was in fact a divine being. That same article quoted a prominent Catholic theologian as saying that he did not know of, and we quote, any credible biblical scholar who would hold for a bodily resurrection, end quote. That discredits me immediately because I do. But this same theologian went on to explain that scholars have to be very careful when you try to tell the average person such things about Jesus. Lay people are, according to this scholar, and I quote, functional illiterates when it comes to the Bible. They have the mind of a child. They want black and white answers. They become very insecure when someone says it is not that simple. Well, I can understand how they might feel insecure. These theologians, I assume, have some scheme worked out in their minds by which they can continue to believe in some sort of religion and call it Christianity without believing in the divinity of Christ or that he rose bodily from the grave. I have to agree, though, with the editor of Der Spiegel, who said that he couldn't for the life of him understand why it suddenly is of no consequence whether Jesus was really resurrected. Because, after all, Paul wrote in the Corinthians, the letter to the Corinthians, the first one, if Christ be not risen, then is our preaching vain, and your faith is also vain. The entire thing revolves around whether or not Jesus Christ of Nazareth is alive today. There's another work of seven prominent British theologians called The Myth of God Incarnate. In the preface to their book, the authors expressed their agreement with the words of the poet T.S. Eliot, who said, and I quote, Christianity is always adapting itself into something which can be believed. They then go on to explain that in the 19th century, Christianity was, in effect, forced to make two major adjustments in order for thinking people to keep believing on it. One was that it had to be admitted that man evolved along with other life forms on earth, and the other adjustment was to acknowledge that the books of the Bible were written by a variety of human beings in a variety of circumstances and cannot be accorded a verbal divine authority. Now, I wasn't around in the 19th century, so I wasn't forced into admitting that. I've never admitted and will not admit, because I've disproved it time and time again in years of teaching college classes on the subject, writing countless articles and so on the subject, that evolution explains the origin of human minds. It simply does not, and evolution can be disproved. And I've never been forced into concluding that evolution is the only answer for how we got here. I've never assumed that we came from brown scum or green slime or polka-dotted air bubbles in a sea or a methane ammonic soup where a spark of life was struck and that we went through a process of lovesick amoeba all the way to the orangutans until we finally are the way we are today. I've never been under the impression that I had been forced to admit that the Bible is a collection of impressionistic tales about how men experienced God. But anyway, to get back to this book the British theologians wrote, they said that in the 19th century these concessions were made, and now they say another concession must be made, or again thinking people will desert the faith. And what is the third concession that supposedly must be made? Well, according to their book, we're going to have to quit asserting that the real Jesus was God incarnate. Now, we'll continue to be quite airtight to believe that Jesus was, in their words, a man approved of God for a special role within the divine purpose, whatever that divine purpose may be. But the notion that Jesus was God in the form of a man, that God changed himself into a germ of life to become born of a virgin, that became a human being with the same fleshly chemical existence you and I have, and died, and then was miraculously resurrected, and walked right through stone, and eventually was assumed to the right hand of the Father in heaven, that, of course, an awful lot of people really take exception to. So this concession is supposedly going to have to be made in the interest of intellectual honesty in order, so the authors tell us, to make it possible, and I quote, for many inhabitants of our modern science-oriented culture to be Christians today. You know, when you read something like that, you can very easily sympathize with the cynic, because after all, what we're presented with is a faith, Christianity, which is constantly tossed about by our modern science-oriented culture, and forced to constantly alter its beliefs. And simultaneously, we see the high priests of this faith, the theologians, withholding vital information about the very underpinnings of their faith and divulging only certain portions of what they believe, constantly hammering away on the wonderful personality of Jesus Christ. Oh, he's a marvelous person. He's a lovely man. What he does for you, he makes you feel so good. They adore Christ, they worship Christ, they preach about Christ, bless you, Jesus, let's praise the Lord, on and on and on. But they never get around to telling you what Jesus said. Very few of them will ever tell you that Jesus told a young nobleman who came to him and said, good master, what good thing may I do to inherit eternal life? What did Jesus say? He said, if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. You're not going to hear that preached very often. You won't hear that Jesus said, in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, that they hearing hear not, and seeing hear not, see not, and neither do they understand. You won't hear him saying in the mouths of modern theologians very often, none can come unto me except the Spirit of the Father draw him. And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? That's in Luke 6:46, if you'd like to look it up. Was the real Jesus just a human being, a reformer, a martyred Jewish nationalist around whom a cult sprang up? Did he never claim to be divine, as some of them say? Did he really not rise from the grave? Were such tales, as many theologians feel, merely added on to the Jesus myth during subsequent decades? Was Jesus just a nice man whom God used in some way to carry out some nebulous divine purpose that had something to do with the salvation of mankind, whatever that means? Or can we believe what we read in the 16th chapter of Matthew, where the disciples, or after the disciples told Jesus, some people thought he was John, or he was Jeremiah, or he was Elijah, or somebody else, that Peter finally was asking, who do you say that I am? And Peter said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said, blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah, because God himself had to reveal that to you.
Plain Truth, the international publication of understanding. Plain Truth, information you need in today's changing society. Plain Truth. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. For your free subscription to the monthly Plain Truth magazine, call toll-free 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
It costs you a free telephone. We pay the telephone bill. If you'll pick up the phone and dial 800-423-4444, or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225 for the Plain Truth magazine. Articles on the family, on pornography, on our giveaway of the canal, on what's happening in Korea, the Middle East, the really in-depth concerns of today in the light of Bible prophecy and world conditions, as well as articles that are really helpful that you can use personally, and articles just along the line of this telecast on the real Jesus in the Plain Truth magazine, and it's absolutely free of charge. Doesn't even cost you the telephone bill, as I told you. Liberal Christian theologians can still find a place for the Carpenter of Nazareth as well, as you notice. I referred earlier to the book called The Myth of God Incarnate, in which seven British theologians take it upon themselves to enlighten the world that Christianity can and should survive without believing that Jesus was God in the flesh. When asked how Christianity could survive such a blow as this, one of the authors was quoted in Time magazine as saying there are two possibilities. The stronger one would involve avoiding metaphysical claims about Jesus, that is, avoiding that he's divine at all, but insist that his life and all that stem from it are essential to human faith. A weaker form would merely recognize that, quote, faith came alive through the figure of Jesus for those raised in Christian cultures, end quote. Isn't that cute? Isn't that lovely double talk? Faith came alive in the person of Jesus. But the idea that he is God, that God came down and became a man, that God himself as a man died and was resurrected and is again God and has the power to resurrect your body, well, we wouldn't want to strain anybody's intellectual processes, would we? So most people just quietly sweep that under the cover, including an awful lot of people who are standing up and preaching about Jesus Christ to other people. So what are you supposed to have faith in? I suppose that would still bring on imponderable questions. Faith in what? In a man that was a nice man that had good ideas? Another author of that same book is quoted as saying that, quote, Christ should be considered as a man of universal destiny, an enhanced version of such figures as Gandhi or Mao. And finally, the editor of the book, The Myth of God Incarnate, a theologian named John Hick, is quoted by UPI as saying that he thinks Jesus probably was the most wonderful human being who would ever live. But, he went on, when I try to form a picture in my mind of this Jesus and of his teachings with the help of 100 years of biblical scholarship available, I feel that Jesus wasn't a Christian. He lies at the roots, or the origin, rather, of Christianity, Hick said. He did not teach the doctrine of the resurrection. That bombs my mind. You can see great scholars with doctor's degrees who have been to 3 and 5 and 7 different colleges making statements like, Jesus never preached about the resurrection, have never read the 5th chapter of John. I'm telling you, the time is coming when the dead that are in their grave shall come forth and shall hear his voice. How in the world can they just ignore what Jesus himself said? A distinguished British historian, Michael Grant, in a book about the life of Jesus, says that the miracles, virgin birth, and resurrection are probably legendary stories developed after Christ's death, but he still feels that Jesus, quote, was and permanently remains the most heartening thing that has ever happened to the human race. It's all very nice. It's all very encouraging. It's nice to know that even though people feel Jesus may not have existed, that he was a mushroom, he was a homosexual, whatever he was, some Eastern mystic, wasn't divine, maybe he was a liar, it was awfully nice, nice thing to happen to the human race, probably almost as nice as the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus. They think that probably he didn't rise from the dead, but somehow his followers became nicer people than they have been before. At least they were nice enough, years later, to jot down some quaint inspirational tales and began to think that maybe Jesus had risen from the dead. It gave them faith, gave them hope. And after all, you could think the people grubbing around in the mole holes underneath the Roman cities, who were hiding out, maybe getting a breath of air at night and lived there for 17, 20, or 30 years, might want to believe that someday they too could come out of those tombs and live a normal life. It's nice to know that even if we try to trace the real Jesus back and find that instead of becoming clearer, he sort of evaporates into a strange conglomeration of traditions and creeds, that we can still go to church and have our hearts warmed by trusting in this man who's sort of an enhanced Mao. People don't need Jesus for a kind of a Betty by story. We've had enough philosophies and heroes of one sort or another to imbue us with grandmotherly, heartwarming sentiments. You really do need a Jesus who can lower your taxes, frankly. You need one who can do away with pollution, one who can solve the energy crisis, one who can do away with the arms race, one who can bring peace to this world, one who can keep the Jews and Arabs from each other's throats, one who can solve the problems between the Soviet Union and the United States. We need a Jesus who can clean up rivers, clean up cities, and cause kids to quit abusing their elders and can solve the problems of crime. We need a Christ who can clean up this rotten, filthy world, not just some Betty by tail to adore, like clutching your little blanket like, Linus in a peanut strip. You don't need a Christ of convenience. You don't need a Christ to assuage your conscience. You need a very God who is going to set his hand to intervene in the course of human affairs and to take a hand in world conditions. The real Jesus Christ, believe it or not, intends doing that. And you ought to hear a great deal more of what that real Jesus Christ intends doing. And how can you look at world events of growing drought, of famine, of economic problems in the United States and abroad? How can you look at what is happening in Europe, the siege mentality of the German people with leading industrialists being kidnapped, of what's happening, all the hijackings, the people now, West German troops being sent or policemen to search their Lufthansa aircraft and even foreign places? What does that mean? What's that leading to? What about the Middle East? What about the prophecies of 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter? Is the Jesus Christ of Nazareth, who really walked the dusty roads of Palestine so many centuries ago, at the right hand of God the Father right now? That's your big question. Here in our science-oriented culture, we're pretty down-to-earth and practical people. We want to know, okay, it feels good in church, but what about on Monday when I'm looking at the bills? Do you want a tangible, historical, valid, visual, believable triumph over death by the promise that you yourselves can overcome death and rise from the grave? If not, why bother? If Jesus Christ did live, if he did walk this earth, if he is a very literal living being, then it's about time you found out what that Jesus Christ was really like and found out from those who knew it best. You're going to find on bookshelves in your neighborhood very quickly this book, and I've got to emphasize, you can't phone in for this one. I wrote this book just like Dr. Billy Graham wrote a book on angels, and many people have written books, and it's been given over into the publishers, and the publishers are distributing it in bookstores all across the United States and Canada. I hope it'll be in your neighborhood very, very soon, and you can go to your local bookstores and ask for it, called The Real Jesus. It's probably going to upset a lot of folk because they're going to find out that at times Jesus could be abrasive. They're going to find out that he, like all of us, was tempted in every point like as we are. And they're going to find out an awful lot more than a collection of myths or sentiments or heartwarming little Betty-bye tales as they read about the man who was all man and a yard wide, who owned at least two homes, who took over the business after his father Joseph died, who sent Mary to live with John as he was dying on the stake, who predicted his own disciples would leave him, who stayed in very palatial estates and slept indoors most of his life, as well as laying his head on a stone or a rock out in the desert once in a while. A totally different Jesus than most people have ever seen before. That book will be available in your area very soon, I hope. And if not, you can ask your bookstore about it. It's called The Real Jesus. In the meantime, you can write or call in, better yet, right now, the toll-free number 800-423-4444 for your free copy of The Plain Truth Magazine. In Alaska, California, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225, and that's free, The Plain Truth Magazine. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.